anyone can feel a bit lonely from time to time. But when does loneliness become a problem that's bad for your health? And why, as the research is telling us, are men more likely to feel lonely than women? What lies at the heart of male loneliness? Adrian Franklin is Professor of Creativity and Cultural Policy at the University of South Australia, and he's been looking into this. Adrian, hello, welcome.
Hi, how are you?
Very well, thank you. Now, loneliness is a word that we use a lot, but Adrian, what would you say is the essential defining characteristic of it?
Yes, people often think it might be to do with social isolation or not having enough people in your life. But in our surveys, we've found that the very lonely people are often, you know, they often have full of, you know, good relationships. They're married often, they have family, there's loads of friends, 300 Facebook connections and so forth, but they're lonely. And the key defining thing for loneliness is actually whether it gives you a sense of belonging to something.
So, you know, with all those relationships, is that you need to be connected to them. It's a sort of sense of disconnection from any of those relationships that you might have. Is that right?
It's more to do with the fact that when you have strong bonds, when you really matter to somebody else, you want to be part of their lives and they want you to be part of theirs, that there is a sense of being together in the world, of caring, of loving. Those strong bonds that we have with those people give us a sense of belonging to something, whereas what we've tended to do in the modern world is create, you know, lots and lots, almost hundreds of weak bonds, and these just don't give you that sense of belonging or being cared for.
Well, from your research with Australian men, I was alarmed actually by the serious levels of loneliness that you found among men aged 25 to 44, so young men. Can you say why?
Yeah, it's fairly easy to suggest why that group is singled out. Traditionally, these people were in the prime of life. These are not supposed to be lonely. The lonely people are supposed to be young adults, adolescents, and very, very old people. But in our survey, we found the most lonely were in that age group, 25 to 44. And the men are finding it grueling and are seriously lonely at levels way above women, partly because of the impact of being separated. This is a part of the life cycle when people are coming in and out of relationships, often divorce and separations, often involving children. And men just don't thrive through that very well. For example, a separated woman in Australia were less than twice as likely to suffer serious loneliness as married women, but separated men were over 13 times more likely than married men to experience loneliness as a serious problem. I mean, that is an extraordinary statistic.
Mm. Well, let's now meet Dr. Katrina Jaworski. She lectures in cultural studies at the University of South Australia. Katrina, welcome to Life Matters.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Now, you've done research into suicide and gender. Picking up from what Adrian's just saying there, with men, is a relationship breakdown and potentially the loneliness that comes from that a reason that men might take their lives?
It is, but traditionally it's not seen as a reason for men suiciding. So often in the past, people would think that men killed themselves because of financial hardships or physical disability. But recent research suggests that, in fact, it's emotional breakdowns and relationship breakdowns that are the reasons for their attempts at suicide and completed suicide.
So, Katrina, can you say more about perhaps the nature of relationships that men form, and I mean relationships in the broader sense, that increases their vulnerability to this and to loneliness?
I think in some ways it's divorce that contributes to their suicidality, but it's also what happens within the breakdown on a relationship. For instance, research reports that a man will lose a relationship either through divorce or separation, and will turn to suicide because he can't cope with the emotional turmoil. So suicide becomes a solution. But also there's a problem there because suicide is used as a way to mask emotions. They don't want to express depression. They don't want to express heartache. They don't want to show being depressed. So suicide becomes that answer. And, you know, often it's to do with the fact that their lives were centred around the partner they had, whether it's because they had children or because they were, you know, just a couple. And with a relationship breakdown comes a sense of loneliness insofar as they social networks often break down. And that happens in particular as well with older men when their partner of 50 years dies and suddenly they find themselves at a complete loss as to what to do.
And at this point, let me give the number for Lifeline. It's 13 11 14. 13 11 14 is the number for Lifeline. Adrian Franklin, how does the loneliness of Australian men compare with that in other countries? I think you've looked at this.
The Australian men seem to have... they are... much more emotionally challenged, I think, compared to, say, Italian or French men. Italian and French men have got more emotional candor. They can talk about their emotions. They can talk about their heartaches. They can talk about their loneliness. You can't stop English people talking about this. But Australian men, very reticent to do this. This is a real problem. And part of that has to do with the fact that the whole area of creating social bonds in Australian gender cultures is taken up mostly by women. They are what anthropologists call kinkeepers. They are the ones that gather together around them strong bonds with family, with their friends, with locality, with neighbours, and so forth. And when Australian men marry such women, they come into a kind of already made social circle.
Yes.
And they take it for granted, and they have good relationships within it, they interact with it. But when the relationship breaks down, because the wife has, or partner has, the primary relationship to all of these people.
And has put all the work into those relationships.
Yes, they all gather around her to support her, to repay her all the emotional work she's done. And he finds himself sometimes with absolutely nobody, but also owing to the way in which courts distribute, you know, property and children and custody and so forth. He's often cast into, the nether regions of large Australian suburbs. So it's a very isolating spatially and socially.
Is that a kind of, would you call that a kind of emotional laziness though?
Yeah, I have actually. I've actually written that on several occasions. It is a sort of emotional laziness, but I mean, it's part of the culture. They don't feel able to do it very easily. What we've discovered, and Katrina can say more about this, is that men seem to be able, their emotional lives historically, at least in the last 100 years or so, has been around the workplace. With male friends and male social bonds, and these have been very, very strong. We call it mateship, and they make these relationships as they make things and work at something. There's a pretext for having a relationship with someone, and then they grow strong and love forms. It's not often expressed like that, but it's there. We know that, but the workplace has become less amenable for them to do that. They're often individualized. They're often competing with one another in labor markets. They've lost their unions. The whole manufacturing factory making stuff basis of men's work has also undermined that. So here's another reason why men have lost out. They've lost their social base of belonging.
Mm. Katrina Jaworski, you've also done research with older men and loneliness, with older men in their sheds, and yes, talked to them about what makes them feel connected or not. What were some of the things they said to you?
in the community shed space, so I've done research on both the community sheds and private sheds, because actually a lot of men are private shed dwellers. Mm-hmm. In the community space, what they loved the most was not the fact that you can actually come and make something, but because you can actually come and hang out with some mates or the people they know or people they become friends with. And they really appreciated also the fact that they could make things alongside younger generations, as well as share stories with other men, as which included facts about their health, which men otherwise would never talk about.
And what about the private shed dwellers?
The private shed dwellers are different kind of, well, they're not a different breed, but they love doing their things. They love their sheds because those sheds are museums, and they have all their memories and all the tools being handed down from one generation to another. They also make beer with their son-in-laws or even daughter-in-laws. So in the course of my research, I learned a lot about beer-making tools and wine-making. But it's also about being, about dwelling in that space, just hanging out and having a cup of tea.
Well, now, you noticed something that hadn't occurred to me, Katrina, which is that retirement villages don't tend to have sheds.
No, so that's the huge thing they lose out when they move out of their private homes into retirement villages. And there are some instances of men kind of joining up walls in their, you know, little tiny shed spaces or under the carport. But generally retirement homes won't have them. The other problem when they do have them, and especially the community sheds, they often are restricted by different licenses and safety regulations. So the men there can only really make things out of wood, and they feel that it's a bit patronising because they've been working with tools all their lives and they know how to handle them. And suddenly they go to this public or more community shed and they can't do anything really. So, but what is interesting, just to add into what Adrian was saying earlier, I think part of that story around kinship for men, of which women are a part, is also the fact that in Australia, you know, men are often encouraged to be strong, independent, assertive, active, definitely never show your emotions in public, let alone in front of your mates, because otherwise you're not man enough. And part of that masculinity that I think I would argue contributes to why they end up being quite lonely later on.
Well, Adrian Franklin, would you say that there's anything that can and needs to happen at a kind of, I don't know, policy level to get loneliness on the agenda, taken seriously as an issue, particularly for men?
Oh, yes. Yes, there's so much that can be done. And now that the UK has a ministerial portfolio for loneliness.
That's
which
right.
Is
that's astonishing. Yeah.
That follows in the events of Jo Cox. It's her legacy, really. It was her big project, which she was building. Well, Jo Cox was the Labour MP who was murdered by extreme right wing activists, as you may recall, her big crusade was to do something about loneliness. So, as a beautiful legacy to her memory, a ministerial portfolio for loneliness was created in the UK, but not before time. And the UK was making big moves towards it. So, what can be done at a policy level? So one of the things that actually is being done at a policy level in Australia, which comes out of the research that we've been doing, actually, we created this opportunity, is to do something about companion animals and loneliness.
Rights for renters about having pets.
That's right. I mean, in France, it's illegal to refuse someone a private rented property or any property on the basis that they have a companion animal. But renters in Australia can add clauses that ban them. And this is because policy is driven by, well, most rented properties are coming from people investing in private renting, as opposed to other places like in Germany and France, where the the provision of rented properties is coming from long-term home-giving companies and individuals. So they understand that, you know, a decent home would have a cat or a dog in it if people wanted it. But in Australia, they just think, oh no, we want to get our money in and out of the sector as fast as possible. We don't want any management issues. And it's really out of fear rather than knowledge about how companion animals can live in properties that they do this. And
well,
so
look,
new research has just been commissioned to try and remove these barriers. So that's happening.
Okay,
the other thing that we can do through education is to teach boys how to be kingkeepers. It's simple. Get them at a young age, show them the value of strong bonds and why it's important to belong, to find a belonging in life, and to give them the skills and get them to practice creating their own social bonds. I mean, that's something you can do through education. And employment policy can start to create better secure environments at work, encourage collegiality, enable men to have those, and women, to have good, strong bonds with people in the workplace.
Well, I applaud you both on the research you're doing and the potential outcomes of it. Adrian Franklin is a social anthropologist. Katrina Jaworski researches and lectures in cultural studies. They're both at the University of South Australia. And I thank you both for joining us in Life Matters. Adrian, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And Katrina, thanks to you.